Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, live from the WNYC studios in Soho. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us. It is February, and in honor of Black History Month, this year we're going to highlight the intersection of Black art and history. We're calling the series Black Art History. Later this week, we'll talk about the founding of the Studio Museum in Harlem with its director and chief curator, Thelma Golden. Photographer Ming Smith will join us to discuss her show at the Museum of Modern Art. We'll hear about the Met show about Black potters. And today, we kick off the series with an artist whose installation on the High Line conjures the power of the Black press. The piece is titled Freedom Stand, and it's named after the first Black-owned and operated newspaper in New York City, Freedom's Journal, founded in 1827. The piece Freedom Stand is on the High Line at 30th Street until August 2023. Joining me now to talk about it and his practice as an artist and educator is Fahim Majid. The Chicago-based artist's work has been shown around the world. He recently received the Field and MacArthur Foundation's Leaders for a New Chicago Award. He was the executive director of Chicago's Southside Community Art Center. Majid co-founded and is the co-director of the Floating Museum, an arts collective that brings art to neighborhoods. And by the way, the Floating Museum team was chosen to direct the 2023 Chicago Architectural Biennial. So they are busy. He is busy. We are so glad you made time today. Fahim, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you for having me.
So Freedom Stand was commissioned for the High Line. What were the initial conversations like?
Well, initially, I was one of the I was nominated to submit a proposal for the Plinth Project, which like 50 artists or so kind of came up with ways of envisioning that space. And unfortunately, mine wasn't selected. But I think the curators really liked the concept of what I was thinking about and some of the ways I was thinking about a structure that contrasted the space. And they approached me separately. And I was really great at work. I'm really happy it worked out. And I actually really, really love the location. It's the perfect location for it.
Yeah, because the installation is big. I just walked upon it on MLK Day. I was walking the High Line thinking about life. And there it was. And I thought, wow, what is this 15-foot structure? And then I did a little digging. And so it's the structure itself is based on an African cart. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a mix. So, you know, it's based on an outmoded newspaper stand. So that's why it's called Freedom Stand. It's a little bit of a play on words of Freedom's Journal and a newspaper stand, which is kind of, you know, used to be spaces of congregation. Mm-hmm. It was like the Facebook before there was Facebook, you know what I mean? Or the Instagram before there's Instagram, and a little bit of a billboard, a little bit of a way of getting information or what was going on, very local. So that's kind of outmoded. And a lot of these structures still sit around Chicago. They're kind of grandfathered in and actually become gathering spaces for senior citizens to sell, like, you know, just have coffee and hang out. And I wanted to kind of honor that history, but also honor the role of the Black voice and the Black newspaper, you know, kind of the notion of our voice, not it's you know, the messages aren't necessarily about Black news, but it's about world news through a Black lens and a Black voice without editing. So it's I just wanted to honor that.
What materials did you use?
So yeah, it's also inspired by Dogon architecture, kind of like these pill houses. So it is a lot of the wood is kind of reclaimed wood from old housing demo buildings. And I really wanted to honor kind of the intuitive kind of building that you see in a lot of the newspaper stands where things don't quite line up. They kind of, they're more of function and kind of start to take, emulate kind of shanties and shacks in a way to be around functionality to really highlight the message that was going out.
So all along the structure are the front pages of Black papers. Where did you go to research the papers?
You know, initially I had this really great young researcher named Shala Jamoa, who's in school at Northwestern right now, getting her master's. And she was really an amazing person to work with in that, you know, everywhere we really just scratched the surface. I could make like 100 of these newspaper stands, all with different messages. And what was great was a lot of the information was readily available because oftentimes our voices aren't really honored. So somewhere someone has taken the time to make some of these things available. So we have our deep archives, and then we have our surface archives of really culling the best of, as many diverse best of as possible. But the Black voices, not myopic. It's very diverse. And there's some conservative perspectives in here, along with some very liberal perspectives, going all the way back to the first newspaper, Black-owned, Black-managed newspaper, Freedom's Journal, back in 1827. So it's really like a, it's almost like a sci-fi. It's like the newspaper of the past and the present. And, you know, sometimes they're talking about like pushes against vaccinations and pushes against, you know, anti-vaccine and things like that. But they're talking about 1920.
Yeah.
They're not talking about current. So it's also amazing that the news is the same. That's what's really amazing. It's like, it's cyclical. Mm-hmm. And the same headlines then are the same headlines now. Black boys being killed.
My guest is Fahy Majid. The name of the piece is Freedom Stand. You can see it at the High Line at 30th Street until August 2023. Yeah, I was kind of looking through all the different images. There was one from 1919, a paper, The Chicago Whip, with a huge headline, Send Race to Africa. There was the Flora Sentinel Bulletin from 1971. It says, Blacks start mixing at all-white church. What were you looking for when you were looking at the imagery?
Yeah, the design. I mean, all of these front pages are designed really well. And, you know, just also, you know, it's like it's about sucking you in. And some of them are very, you know, you start to learn each paper has a different kind of way of doing that. Some of my favorite are the Black Panther newspapers, which are very image strong. Those are some of my favorite. And actually, some of the older newspapers, the big splashes are on the back end because the smaller font are on the front because that's where the advertisements are. So we found advertisements and all types of things. But from paper, The American in Washington, D.C., which was very political, things about Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, Malcolm X versus Martin. You kind of get lost. Actually, it was actually very hard to select.
I'm sure.
Because we rotate them every month with wheat pasting. So I was also thinking about this notion of kind of going up, kind of shaving down, and then coming back and kind of pasting over and over and over. So each month there's a selection that get put up. And it's hard to choose because it's fascinating.
Well, and that's also what's great about it is if you've already seen this, you should go back and look again because it's going to be different. It's got a life to it. It's got because these you're going to rotate the papers.
That's right.
What was something that you learned about the Black press that maybe you didn't really understand or fully understand before you got into this project?
One of the things, the Chicago Defender was real important to the Great Migration. The Chicago Defender and how, you know, the Pullman porters would take newspapers down south. And sometimes you wouldn't get the newspaper for months. It would be a really old newspaper, but it was really sending message. You know, the Pullman would sneak them down south and disseminate them amongst Black communities about jobs in the North, opportunities in the North. But also there are these columns about how to behave. Like, you know, when you come up North, you got to put some shoes on. You got to do this. So how important the Black newspaper information was passed, and people would get killed, people would get lynched, people get arrested for having these newspapers. So that's one of the things that I found to be incredibly informative. Just it's not just about, you know, the paper itself, but it's about the importance of Black voice, unedited Black voice, that oftentimes the things that we own as Black are not actually ours. They're not owned, they're edited and controlled. So the other pleasure that I had was actually working with my uncle, who has a Black newspaper called Nubian News in Trenton, New Jersey. And growing up with him kind of doing that and being able to put his newspaper on the newspaper stand when he drives into New York and gets his newspapers often as a Black-owned newspaper. So it was a real treat to be able to honor that as a part of this.
Well, that's exciting. Some of our listeners, we can reach down to near where your uncle's paper is. That's in our listening area. I love that. My guest is Fahim Majid. We are talking about Freedom Stand at 30th Street and the High Line. Also want to talk about his practice a bit. And it's clear that you're deeply invested in bringing art to communities and public art. This is the broad question and the narrow question. Broadly, why is public art important? And then specifically, why is public art important to you?
Yeah. A lot of my work is in public space. You know, my mother was a social worker. My father was a politician. So I kind of do all those things in my work as well. Public art is something versus like, you know, like what's private? It's like the argument is like all art's public. Well, yes and no. Anyone can enjoy public art, meaning you can go to a gallery, but you have to opt into that. Like, you know, when you go into a museum that you're signing up to see something. Public art is about like it's in public space. So people don't have an option. You're engaged with it. You're walking down the street and it just kind of you're confronted with this thing. So oftentimes the scrutiny of public art is much stronger because oftentimes it's not asked for. So I really thought that with this, that this can be challenging. There's some views on here that people push against. A lot of people have issues with Farrakhan. A lot of people have issues with Kanye West. I think he's on there at one point. So there's a lot of things. So yeah, there is some risk, and I really want to say how much I appreciate the High Line, the curators, Melanie, Jordan, who's installing there, and the whole team for taking on this project, which, you know, could, you know, ruffle some feathers as well. So yeah, but public art is a really important aspect of my work as well.
Your artist statement on your website, you wrote, "On the whole, my artwork functions like breadcrumbs in the forest, leading my audience back to the people and spaces I value or that I believe should be valued by others." How did you know that you wanted to use your art in this way?
Yeah, I like to think my work has something for everyone to eat. I think about points of entry. Some people can, like, you know, an archivist can really love this piece. They can go in deep and actually end up knowing more about the subject matter than myself. A curator can come in and think about this and how it kind of parses out and changes into an installation, changes into an exhibition. A gallery can think about that. But also, you know, one of my favorite things is when I went there, I kind of popped up and there was a woman with her daughter there, 7-year-old, and just watching them navigate it through beauty and curiosity. You don't need to know every aspect of it. Actually, it's nice when you come in through the beauty and then realize there's more there. So when you return, you're like, oh, I didn't realize, I thought about it. And now there's other layers to it. So beauty is fine. I love beauty. I love beauty. But I also like creating complex structures and beautiful things as well. It's challenging sometimes. But for me, you know, none of those things are good without the other.
Tell us about the floating museum.
How much time you got? No.
Three minutes.
Yeah, 3 minutes. Okay. So the Floating Museum came, it's a collaborative. It was a passion project that originally the idea came out of a project of thinking about floating a model of DeSable Museum, which was the world's first African-American museum founded in Chicago. And the structure it is now as a model and floating down the Chicago River from the South Side to the downtown corridor, thinking as a gesture of thinking about what happens to a Black institution when it actually has access to the types of capital and cultural capital that's offered downtown. It was a gesture. But through that, we began to build a huge collective and started thinking about the city as the museum, which is floating museum. The city of Chicago in this stance is the museum, its neighborhoods are the galleries, and its citizens are the cultural producers. And pushing against the myth that communities don't have culture. So we don't bring art to communities. We find the art in the communities and bolster it and supply it with resources to make it stronger. And we collaborate, we work with and not for. So we do that in a lot of different ways. Right now, we've been charged with being the curators for the Chicago Architecture Biennial. We're actually coming in town this weekend and do a research trip, do a lot of studio visits. We have a lot of New York architects and artists that will be joining us in Chicago. And we have over 100 or so architects and designers that are going to be activating the city, along with community collaborators that we built over our 7-year kind of tenure.
When someone,
so we're excited. September 2003, we're going to blow up the city.
2023. So in our last moments, if someone goes to see Freedom Stand at the High Line, which I'm sure many people will now, what are some questions you'd like them to consider?
Yeah, I love the kind of 200-year arc. Mm-hmm. Like, I like to think about how one thing communicates with another thing. It's almost like a yearbook of time, like thinking about like what has happened since, how far have we come, you know, how far haven't we come, you know, and then also do some digging on your own. Just Google some of these. It's like there's so many Black-owned newspapers that don't exist anymore. Their archives are amazing. And each front headline page, someone took a lot of time to put together. So it's also a lot of labor as well.
And there's also people that you can look up.
There's people.
There's faces. Wow. There's all, I mean, that was actually kind of, that's a Google rabbit hole.
Yes.
My guest has been Fahim Majid. The name of the piece is Freedom Stand. It is at 30th Street on the High Line. It is up until August 2023. But as you heard, it changes and rotates and evolves every month. So you can definitely keep checking it out all year long. Fahim, thank you so much for making time for us and being with us.
Yes, thank you.